Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hello and welcome back to Two Bi Guys. It's been a couple of weeks. We're on a new bi-monthly or bi-weekly schedule. I've learned that both make sense, but we're bi-monthly now instead of once a week. We're two or more times a month, as we know that bi means two or more. And we have a very special guest here, someone who I met and connected with on social media, the great Bi Connector. I am joined by Jen Winston. They are a writer, creative director, and bisexual. Jen runs a monthly newsletter called The Bi Monthly. I just wrote a piece in there that's coming out soon, so we're doing a little crossover action. Their first essay collection, Greedy, Notes from a Bisexual Who Wants Too Much, comes out with Atria Books on October 5th, and you can pre-order now. We're going to talk about that book. I'm excited because it's great. Jen's work bridges the intersection of sex, politics, and technology, and has been featured by The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post, CNN, and more. Jen is passionate about unlearning and creating work that helps others do the same. Me too. We'll talk about that. She lives in Brooklyn with her partner, dogs, and iPhone. And you can follow her all over social media as Generous with a J. So welcome to Two Bi Guys, Jen Winston.
Oh my gosh, I'm so happy to be here. I'm a massive fan of this podcast and of you, as you know.
Thank you.
Yay.
Thank you. And I am a fan of you. I'm glad we're finally getting to
Me
do this.
Me too.
We just had Shiri Eisner. Next up is Robin Oakes. And now we have you. This is the season of Bi-Con women on Two Bi Guys.
Yes. Or, well, I mean, I'm not actually sure how Shiri identifies, but I mean, I'm also not sure how I identify, but like femme bi people who are like now questioning their gender, perhaps.
Well, yes, this leads us to our opening question, but I think you and Shiri have similar identities. You both use she or they. Sorry to answer the question I'm about to ask, but let's start there. How do you identify on whatever spectrums you would like to identify on, and what pronouns do you use, and maybe a little about why?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a good place to start because for me, it feels like where I've ended with like, well, not ended, but like where my bisexuality has like brought me to. It's really helped me, like I identify as non-binary, and it's taken me a long time to get comfortable saying that. I had a lot of imposter syndrome over like, do I deserve this title? And a lot of that kind of felt similar to the things I felt about, do I deserve the title of queer, like as a bisexual person? And so I think what I learned through my coming out journey with bisexuality is that like, I am allowed to identify as fluid and I am allowed to identify as non-binary from a gender perspective. And I still like present as very femme. I definitely pass as a woman, but I use she, they pronouns because it feels affirming. I like don't know how else to say that, but I'm trying to use they more in like public settings because it's pushing me to like not just get the like social media quote unquote privilege of being non-binary, but it's like pushing me to question gender in like public spaces and stuff.
Yeah. Interesting. It's funny because we talked about exactly this on our first episode this season, and like both Alex and I think are in like a similar headspace to where you are or where you were actually, because I still am not quite ready to claim a non-binary identity, even though I also like don't care so much or connect so much anymore with the male identity. Mm-hmm. Although there are things about masculinity I embody and I enjoy, but then there are feminine things that I'm beginning to embrace. So like, I know what you mean about the imposter syndrome of like, can I claim this? I had that with bisexuality and I'm still kind of in there with the gender stuff. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really hard with fluid identities because like the whole point is that like, it's not in a box, but it's like, if it's not in a box, then how do I label myself that way? And it makes it kind of hard. And then there's like, you see a lot of memes that are like, non-binary people don't owe you androgyny. And I always like say that in my head because that helps me get into the logic loop of like, non-binary people don't owe you androgyny. So like, you don't have to look androgynous to be non-binary. So like, there's no way to define non-binary identity other than the way that you feel and identify. And I think there is a balance to like, do I take up space with this identity? Like, am I going to be like, I'm the non-binary person on the panel? Like, no, you know, I don't need to represent that perspective. But like, I'm trying to figure out how to navigate that identity, especially with like a public presence. Of course, I say public presence. I'm sure like no one cares how I identify except for like my friend and my mom, you know, but I'm like my Instagram. But I'm trying to figure out how to navigate that and not take up space and like do it for myself, which has been actually like a good way to like distance myself from the internet a bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the stuff about like presenting non-binary in public or but using she or they, because we also talked about that of like using it as a way to sort of push people to contend with non-binary gender. And like, I guess I'm not ready to quite claim that, but I do push the view of gender as fluid and not binary. And I guess I would identify myself as gender non-conforming or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be something, but I'm still, I don't know, not quite comfortable claiming it yet.
I mean, I'm not like great at it yet either.
Good. We can learn about it together.
Yeah, we sure can. And my partner is trans non-binary and like very visibly androgynous, and like they have trouble in bathrooms. Like, people stare at them strange in the men's bathroom, people stare at them in the women's bathroom, and like they like need the gender neutral bathroom option to like feel comfortable. And so something that they've asked me to start doing that I like already have a really hard time with is going into the men's bathroom. Like, the other day we were at the airport and I like needed to pee, and I remembered that I was supposed to do this because sometimes I forget. And I remembered that this was like my assignment to like, you know, as like an act of allyship and like solidarity. And I actually think it's a great one because it's like inoffensive, really. But I just like couldn't do it. I was too embarrassed. And it really gave me an understanding of what they go through every day that I don't go through. And there's so much privilege associated with that, regardless of what pronouns I use. And
right.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We also have similar partners. Mine is trans, non-binary too, and I don't get misgendered. They do get misgendered. And it's, yeah. Okay. Okay. We could talk about this forever, but
Well, I do want to say, so like, I mean, not to like give away my book, but like, this is kind of how my book ends, is like being like, what does gender mean? And like, showing that bisexuality like really helped me navigate these bigger questions of gender and like learn to sit with the questions of it. And I think that something I learned while I was writing it is that this experience of first coming out as bisexual and then like finally getting comfortable with that identity and then having these questions of gender is something that a lot of bi people experience. And I learned that because of TikTok. I saw I was writing that chapter and I saw like 40 TikToks that were all like, me understanding my sexuality. And then it's like someone creeps in the side of the room and then it's like she, they pronouns. Like it was the exact arc of my life. And I was like, wow, I hope that this resonates with people. So I do think that like, even though we feel like we're on a tangent, like maybe we're not.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I think it actually makes perfect sense that our work is on a similar trajectory. Cause like we talked about male bisexuality season one, almost exclusively. And then now season two and three, we talk so much, sometimes more about gender fluidity. And I do think it is kind of a natural progression of
very
like,
interesting.
Right. Like my way in was about my attractions to other gender presentations. And then it morphed into questioning my own and like, what does that mean? And what is gender at all?
Yeah. And
so
I think
it's all related.
Yeah. And I mean, bisexuality, in order to like be comfortable in it, you have to kind of break down the idea of binaries in general. And so that's like, you know, a way of thinking in the same sense that like using they, them pronouns shifts your mentality, like even just at incorporating that into your language as like a singular pronoun. It really like bisexuality shifts your like vocabulary and like logic tools to be able to be like fluidity is comfortable and we can stay here.
Yeah. When my partner started using they, them pronouns, it really exposed for me how gendered everything is and how often we use he or she without thinking about it. And then like it took me a little while to get it. And then it became easy. And it was a shift in my perception of gender. Like it really did shift my thinking by forcing myself to do it. And then by, you know, getting other people to do it, it really does challenge people's like assumptions. And we use he and she so much more than you realize. Like it's, we gender people if they're crossing the street, like we gender them. It's like, why? Why does their gender relate to this thing we're talking about?
Totally. And then it's like everywhere. Anytime you call like a service company, like anytime you're like booking a flight or like dealing with a bank or like it's like everywhere. It's so exhausting.
Okay, so we'll get back to more gender stuff, I'm sure, because as we've talked about, it's intertwined. But take us back a little. Tell us about your, you know, whenever you realized you were bi, like, what was it like before then? How did you start to realize? What was the coming out process like? When did all this happen?
I mean, it happened over several years. Like, I feel like the first time I heard the word, I was like, oh yeah, that's me. And then like almost immediately after I heard like some negative stigma about it and I was like, nope, never mind, not me. And I like never, you know, I stifled it because the majority of my dating experience like was straight passing or like was with men, with cis men specifically. And I just like that, it was so much easier to just like keep going on that side of my life and not really like I had a really hard time like dating anyone else. Like I felt I went on several dates with women for a long time. I did not know that like non-binary people existed and I had not met any or maybe I had. I just like wasn't aware of, you know, their gender identity and how to respect it. And I just like kept dating men and it felt like this cycle. And I was like, well, I guess I'm straight because like I keep doing this. Like I keep leaning toward this. Like, you know, I must be straight. And I knew in my head that I was bisexual, but I just felt like I was a fraud of queerness in general. And then there's like, I've come to realize that I think one of the biggest issues to my coming out journey was the notion that like everyone is bisexual, which I don't think I don't think that affects bisexual men as much as it affects bisexual women. Cause there's this like, I mean, maybe it does. I would love to hear your take, but it definitely feel for bisexual women, it feels like bisexuality is like you're a straight girl with a wild side rather than like you have this full identity. And so much of that comes to the fact that bisexuality is often treated in media and just like the way that we talk about it socially the way that we talk about it socially is we treat it as a behavior rather than an identity. And so it becomes like everyone has like done bi things, but like, are they bi? And I think that's a whole, I mean, that gate kept me from claiming that identity for a really long time.
Right. No, I do think you're right, especially with women more than men, that identifying as bi is sort of written off as like, oh yeah, everyone does a little of that or goes through that. And it's so it erases the identity and it's like, right. So and with men, it's different. Like if you're bi, people will believe the part about your attractions to men, but just to kind of assume you're gay and you're not ready to, you're too homophobic to claim that identity or something. And it's funny because in your book, you wrote about how when you did come out, you wanted to date women to sort of be bi and like, you know, like really claim that and have people believe it. And it's funny that when I came out, I had the same feeling of like, I need to keep dating women. So that people believe I'm bi. Like, so it was like the opposite, but similar.
So interesting. It's like, I mean, I'm sure by now, like everyone, and I'm sure you've talked about this, but I'm sure everyone has seen that like meme and TikTok and tweet that's like the reason we think that all men who are bi are actually gay and all women who are bi are just experimenting is because like we think everyone's just attracted to men. But it was so interesting to me to like unpack the way that the patriarchal ties to just like heteronormative ties, you know, impact everything. Like that's fascinating that we both felt like we had to date women to overcome that same core stereotype. That's like, but same, but different. That's very interesting and totally makes sense.
Right. I read that part of the book and I was like, oh yeah, me too. Except that I had been dating women for so long. And I was like, I better keep doing this. And you were like, I need to try this.
Yeah. I mean, one of my best friends is bi and he's in the book. He's like excited for all the secondhand fame he's going to get. His name's Ben. He's like, hey Ben. And he's like, he's always been a really great, I think he's been a big part of my coming out journey because we dated for a while. That's what's in the book. But it took me a really long time to like reflect back on that and realize that that was a queer relationship because both of us were bi. I mean, even if one of us had been bi, it would have been a queer relationship. But we definitely – like there was something about dating another bi person that made me feel like I could claim that identity in a way that I hadn't felt otherwise. And my partner also identifies as bi now, which they're just like, that's cool. Kind of irrelevant to my life because like we're monogamous and their transness is like way takes priority over their bisexuality in terms of like what identities impact their day to day, which like makes complete sense. But I think I've realized that like my sexuality is like bi for bi. Like it's like what I identify. Like I vibe with people who are like sexually fluid and yeah.
I identify with that so much. Like I am much more connected with other bi people. And I've also found that since coming out, more people have come out to me. You know, not everyone. There's definitely straight people out there still, unfortunately. I don't know why they persist, but more bi people have been coming out since I've come out to them. Have you found that?
Like, yes, I have. And I mean, I get like so many like DMs all the time from people who come out. And honestly, if my book accomplishes one thing, I hope that it helps one person come out as bi, because I think there's this assumption that bisexuality isn't worth talking about. Like I didn't mean to keep bringing this up in interviews because I like really do like respect Jordan Firstman's comedy, but I have a bone to pick with this one small thing he posted on a story at one point. And only because it's like seared itself into my brain. So at one point he was like collecting secrets and like collecting random secrets through like a question sticker on Instagram. And someone said, I'm bisexual. And like he always collects a secret and like does like a funny reaction. And it's always like very funny. And this one was also funny, but it took me, I can't stop thinking about it. Someone said, I'm bisexual as their secret. And he like posted a video of himself crying. And like the joke is like, of course, that's fine. Like the joke is like, of course, I'm fine with this, which I honestly like still think it's hilarious. But it's like subtly what it does is it makes people think it's not a big deal to come out as bisexual. And like that's what kept me from coming out for so long. And then, you know, I keep comparing bi people to like vegans because we're like, I'm bi, I'm bi, I'm bi. But there's like no other way to be visible other than to say it. And I mean, I think about this a lot as it relates to like representation in the media, because like, how are you going to show that someone's bi on TV? You like often writers will be like, have them hook up with multiple genders and like then we show it. But that again reinforces that it's a behavior and not an identity. And it just like, unless someone says that they're bisexual, to me, it doesn't count as representation, which is why I'm so obnoxious and say it all the time.
Yes. Well, and I think that we've talked about this bi representation with Shiri, with others, like that's what it's often reduced to. And there's so much more about it to the experience like that you've written about in the book, about confusion and messiness and all these things that we try to kind of push out of the representation, but like was my experience and was like, it has become my worldview of looking at things in a non-binary way, which affects so much more than who I'm dating or having sex with. Like it affects daily stuff.
Yeah. And I think that is another thing that I hope people get from my book. I think it's more subtle because I think it's one of those things I like came to the realization while I was writing it. And if I had had more time, I would have like made it more like pop out. But for me, like a big eye-opening thing was to realize that like queerness is like a way of life and it's bigger than any one person's identity. Yeah. And realizing that really helped me take myself out of it, I guess, and like not, you know, be like, am I queer enough? Like, do I fit this box? It's like, oh, it's like actually not really just about you. It's like about your perspective. And like that has clearly been queer all along. And so I was able to kind of be like, you know, this is who I am. But yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, especially like questioning gender norms, or gender in general. I'm always just like, why is anything gendered? Like, it's just so boring to me at this point. Yeah. And I also didn't think that my book would talk so much about womanhood, because like gender is like an eye roll to me at this point. But I realized how much of my bisexuality was like caught up in this journey of womanhood and like the idea of being sexualized and like these statistics about like bi women experiencing sexual assault at a higher rate. Those felt like weirdly affirming to me. Like I was like, oh, I'm bi because I like have experienced so many traumatic sexual scenarios. And like, you know, that sucks when we have to see ourselves in the stats in order to be like, oh, that's me. But it is still like this weird type of validation.
Yeah, no, that is, I hadn't actually thought about that, but you're right. And with men, there's a lot of mental health stuff associated with bisexuality, I think because it's so repressed, especially among men. And so I saw myself in those stats and I was like, oh,
yeah,
this actually makes sense. And I think you're right about like, I went through a phase of saying everyone is bi also, and it's not good. It's not actually a useful thing to say because it is important when someone identifies as bi. But I do kind of think I like to talk about the spectrum of sexuality and not the binary, which like that I think is a universal thing. If people want to put themselves on the corners, that's fine too. But and it is a spectrum. You know,
I actually got like some great feedback from a newsletter I wrote about this where I was writing about the system of monosexism, like in general. Shout out to Shiri for like educating me and so many others about that. But I was writing that like I wrote some line that was like, sure, everyone probably is bi, but da da da. Like I wrote that in the I was like, but it's still harmful when we say it or something. And a lot of people called me out on that because they were like, I identify as queer, or like, I identify as pan. Like, I identify as like abrosexual. Like, I like people have all these different identities. And I realized like that saying everyone is bi also invalidates like other queer identities, right. Like other queer non-monosexual identities. So that was a big like eye-opening moment for me. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to get back to Shiri in a second. I've quoted something from your book, but last thing about
me
you.
Quoting Shiri.
I quoted you quoting Shiri, and I'm going to read all of it.
It was yeah.
But last question, like when, like how old were you? When did you actually really come out, and what was that experience like, and how did you feel about that?
Yeah.
That transition.
I mean, this is like embarrassing because I came out 2 years ago. I came out in 2019. And like since then, I've written a book on bisexuality, which is like so weird. But I mean, I've been bisexual my whole life. I've been thinking about it for several years. Before my newsletter, the bi-monthly was a newsletter, right before COVID, I was planning on making it like a monthly party series that my friend Ben was going to – that was his idea. We were going to like plan it. And then the bi-monthly was my name. And then when COVID happened, I was like, I'm taking this name to make my newsletter. and he was like, fine. But we've like always dreamt of like having like a bi space, like physical space or like party space, because it like doesn't really exist. And I think – coming out as bi has helped me realize that there's a serious need for that. Although there is one bar in New York called Mood Ring that is a bisexual bar.
Really?
And they have really cool bisexual merch. I was going to have a launch party there, but also can't because of COVID. But they're amazing. Yeah. I very much support them. But I mean, something else I realized like while writing this book and just thinking through my life is like, the spaces that create gay identity are so intrinsic to gay identity. I don't know if you've read the book, Gay Bar. Gay Bar, Why We Went Out by Jeremy Atherton Lynn. But cool. It's a great book about the history of gay bars and gay identity. And it talks so much about like how gay bars were like shaped gay identity. And so when you think about the fact that bi people don't have bi spaces, and most of that is because of gender, because these spaces have in large part been segregated by gender, like gay bars and lesbian bars. It's no wonder that we're not a community, or that we don't feel like we are able to say these things out loud, because those physical spaces provide the physical validation for the language.
Right. That's absolutely right. It's something Alex and I have talked about a lot too, because Alex, my co-host, used to work at a gay bar, and he would try to like do bi nights or like make it a bi bar. And you know, it's like, how do you actually do that? You got to kind of attract mixed gender crowd. And it's ended up that my favorite gay bars are the ones that attract mixed gender crowds, because I can feel valid in my bisexuality and not feel like I'm at a gay bar. And actually some queer lesbian bars are I find really fun too, because they're a little bit more mixed.
Yeah. I think that something else I kind of realized upon like doing this research is there are a few queer affirming, like fluidity affirming spaces in New York, and they're like traveling parties, but none of them, like they're all POC led, and there's something to like there's like an absolute reason for that, because like binary gender and like binary queerness even is such a white colonial idea. And once I realized that, I was like, yeah, this is like me dealing with like the whiteness in my queerness, is that like the whiteness is part of the reason I never felt accepted, which I mean, I'm white, I should say, because it's a podcast, but I'm white, but I never was able to fit in these white queer spaces. And I think that's just another like example of how whiteness as an unquestioned principle just hurts everybody.
Yeah. The one bi space I did go to in New York that really does defined my experience of bisexuality for a while, like you said, was like a discussion support group at the center, at the LGBT center. It was called it's called By Request. It still exists. Anyone's welcome.
And I think my friend Ben went to that, actually.
Oh, really? Maybe I know your friend Ben.
Maybe.
Oh, wow. We're going to talk.
Let's find out if you went out.
we're going to talk about Ben in a little bit because I read that chapter of the book.
Lucky
and it's great.
Ben.
Maybe we should loop Ben into this conversation.
Yeah, he'd be happy to. He's a ham.
But yeah, you're right. The physical spaces really define our experience in many ways. So it is important that we get those physical spaces or build them ourselves. If you need help after post-COVID with the bi-monthly, let me know.
I know. It sounds great, right? Patent pending, everybody. Oh. Don't take the idea. I still think it really needs to exist. We were struggling to figure out what it should be like, because I think with a lot of bi culture, there's so much because we have to say it overtly to be visible, like we were just talking about, there's a lot of theoretical conversations that have to happen. And we were like, do we make it like a dinner party that turns into a rave and there's a speaker? And then we were like, do we can we just make it a fun dance event that's openly bisexual? And it took us a while to get past the need to have discussions and stuff. I mean, it's also we haven't talked about it in over a year,
those are interesting debates to have because, it is there's so much to discuss and it's an intellectual thing. It's about your worldview. But it's also you just want to have fun and be free and be ourselves and release the shackles sort of thing. And just a fun dance rave with a bunch of bi people sounds just as therapeutic and affirming and fun as
the
necessary discussions.
Totally. And I think I've had people ask me why the word bisexuality is so important, why I have to talk about that word and why I have to say it and why it's such a big deal to me. And I mean, that's what I was struggling with is can you have fun in that way without having to be so overt about it? Because for me, I feel like I've always needed to, but maybe I'm past that and maybe we can just have fun.
It's a constant struggle, and like many other bi things, the answer is probably a little bit of both.
Yeah, yes.
Moving on, in the book you wrote about, I thought this was really fascinating part, about looking at stereotypes and assumptions and when we play into them or what they mean, and asking why, about why do these stereotypes and assumptions exist? Peeling back the layers of an onion. And you wrote, let me read some of this. And sometimes that peeling that onion can make us cry. I'm reading now, this is you. It took me a while to apply this approach to bisexual stereotypes. And even after I did, I stopped short. I focused on myth busting, insisting that I wasn't confused, wasn't experimenting or in a phase. Then I read Shiri Eisner, whose work questions the very existence of bi stereotypes. Now this is a Shiri quote. I'm quoting you, quoting Shiri.
Yes.
If we're saying, no, we're not confused, no, we're not promiscuous, no, we're not greedy, then we accept that it's wrong to be confused. It's wrong to be greedy. It's wrong to be promiscuous. And I want to ask, why do we have to work by their rules? And then you wrote again, the problem isn't promiscuity, it's patriarchy. The problem isn't confusion, it's binaries, which encourage us to make finite decisions. The problem isn't being greedy, it's systems that function better when we don't demand what we deserve. So I'm curious for you to expand on that, because I think it's so interesting about I did that on this show too. We did the myth busting thing. No, it doesn't mean this, it doesn't mean that. But then there's the next level of why is it bad to do that? Why is it bad to be confused? I think that's the big one for me, is confusion is normal because the world is fucking complicated and crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how could we not be confused? Find me a person who, after this past year, is not just completely confused and unaware of what's going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I love that quote by Shiri so much. As you were reading it, I was almost mouthing the words because I have it memorized. but it's from an article, an interview that Shiri did with Bitch magazine. And it really helped me dimensionalize the these stereotypes, because even still, like, people are asking me to, like, say bisexuals are not greedy, but, like, that's not what I believe. Like, I personally believe that I am greedy, and that's fine, and, like, you need to stay with it if that's a problem. And mm-hmm. So I think even with my book title, like, there was a lot of pushback, because that greedy was the title that I came in with, and there was just a lot of pushback that it sounded so negative. And I was like, that's really the point. Like, the point is to reclaim it. But I think the idea of reclaiming that is still so challenging for people, because the only dialogue that ever happens about bisexuality is myth busting. Like, that's all people say, is like, they're not this, they're not this. And, like, yeah, some stigmas, like, need to be overcome, but the way we're doing it is wrong. Like, what we need to do is separate the idea of monogamy from bisexuality. Like, when you're many binaries, but that as an example, like, when you're talking about if bi people are promiscuous, and like, if a bi person's going to cheat on you, your issue is not with bisexuality, your issue is with monogamy. And that mm-hmm. is just something that so many non-bisexual people don't understand. And there's not this, like, ability to see these interlocking systems and unpack them individually and unpack the rest of what's normative in the world. But I mean, Shiri is like, I'm literally just, this is just my reaction to Shiri, which is, like, basically the whole book. Like, Shiri's work has been so transformative to me in terms of not seeing those things as a bad thing. There was another Shiri quote that I don't think is in the book, but is one of my favorites, where they call confusion a destabilizing agent of social change, which is, like, one of the most powerful things I've ever heard. Like, to think about our ability to not make a decision, which has been seen as such a negative for so long, and consider it, like, a radical engine and way of thinking. Like, I love that. Right. And I think reading Shiri's work is the first time I ever felt proud to be bi. And that's such an important moment. Like, that's such an important thing for people. Yeah.
I identify with that very hard, because I read her book, like, right around when it came out, and it was right around when I was starting to realize this.
In, like, 2003?
No, her book was 2014 or something, I think. I think I read it in 2015.
Sorry, yes. You're talking about I'm thinking of a study she quoted that was from 2003 that I, like, wanted to quote in my book, but it was too old. Sorry.
She's probably been active a long time, but I read the book, and it made me not feel ashamed of being bi. It made me feel like, oh, this is actually, like, a superpower. This is part of my politics. This is, like, part of activism. And it made reading it just made so much sense. It was like, yes, this is what I've been thinking, and these are the words for it that I can have now. And I think you're right about this confusion thing. Like, what you wrote in the book, I think, makes so much sense too, that it's like, confusion isn't a bad thing. Like, I do think it's like, not all bisexuals are people are confused. That's true. But at the same time, confusion isn't bad. It actually means we're really thinking about things and not like taking things for granted, not just believing what we're told about the world, but actually digging into these things and looking at the complexity. So it's actually a good thing to do.
I mean, to be Yeah, totally. And I also wrote a newsletter about this that was probably more succinct than anything in my book. But that is, like, I mean, honestly, if confused was a snappier word, that would have been my title, because, like, that's really my thesis, is that, like, learning that this confusion is something worth sitting with. And that, like you said, is actually a superpower.
I want to talk about some male bisexuality a little bit, which you wrote about in the book. I know you don't identify as male, and not all. We have many gender listeners, but I have a couple questions about stuff you wrote in the book. I want to talk about Ben. One thing you wrote, and I always like to talk about this when we talk to women or not non-binary people or just anyone who's not a man, but you wrote that you find male queerness attractive. Why is that? Yeah. What's attractive about it?
Well, I want to say that if there was one, like, I knew that there would be things I mess up in this book, and I had a lot of, like, sensitivity readers, and I thought about a lot of stuff. That's one thing that I wish I had explained that I wish I had explained fetishization around that a bit more, because I think I didn't really touch on it in like as nuanced of a way as I should have.
Here's your chance. Perfect.
Here's my chance. In fact, this is exactly the audience I want to touch on it with. But I think it's something that with my friend Ben, like he deals with like biphobic people on dates constantly. And I'm livid about the fact I have some quote or some statistic quoted in there that's like the majority of like straight cis women will not date a bisexual man. But at the same time, the majority of Pornhub's views of gay porn come from allegedly straight cisgender women, or like currently identifying as straight cisgender women. And like that pisses me off. And so I felt like by explaining that male queerness is attractive to me, that I was helping to combat that type of biphobia. But it's since become clear to me that like to fetishize it is also, I mean, it definitely, like, if someone said it was fetishizing, I wouldn't be like mad. Like I wouldn't be defensive. I'd be like, I believe you if this hit you that way. I think it goes back to what I was trying to say, or what I was saying earlier, of like bi for bi. Like that's what I find attractive, is like queer people. But I should have addressed the fact that that's an issue. And it's like more people have been talking about it, and hopefully that's something I get to talk about a lot on these press tours, because I do think I didn't handle it as well as I could have.
It's interesting you say that, because I'll calm your nerves for a second, because the way that I read it was not fetishizing at all. Like the way I read that was attractive. Like I read it as attractiveness in a spiritual, connective way, like many different levels to attraction, not just like sexualized or fetishized. Mm-hmm. But it's funny.
That is true.
Yeah.
That's how I meant it. Yeah.
Right. And that's how I took it. But I do think it is interesting to, and probably good to make that clarification, because when the gender roles are reversed, it is very much seen as fetishizing, and usually is, to say like, oh, bi women are hot. That usually comes from a place of sexualization and fetishization, and not like about the person or the worldview. And I know that you did mean from reading more of the book that it's the bi for bi thing. It's the worldview. Mm-hmm, it's the like personality that develops from this identity.
Yeah, totally. But there's very well said. Yeah. I mean, I should have, like, I have a ton of footnotes basically with like, because the book was getting very weighed down with lots of like social justice notes that are very important to like state, but that's why I have those for like additional context. And I should have added that additional context. And I wish I had, because it's an important issue. And I do think it's not like the same as it is for women because of, you know, sexism in general. But the primary issue that I wanted to speak on about bisexuality was I wanted to like, or sorry, about bisexual men, is I wanted to humanize and like endear the bisexual men in my life, because they've been so meaningful. Like those relationships have been so meaningful and like profound to me. And like you said, the personality that develops is like really what mattered. And so I didn't want to make any of those people one-dimensional characters. One of them, I guess, sort of was, but like, that's like the only good sex scene in the book. So like, we're going to just keep it. And then, the fact that he was bi was just, it was like a secondary revelation of like, oh, is this why we connected so much?
Yeah. Interesting.
So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love that. But I also like your friend Ben, I have felt this biphobia from women I've dated, and like an aversion to bisexuality, and sometimes like a very specifically sexual aversion. Like we can be friends, but I don't want to have sex with you. And so, to be honest, if we're sometimes fetishized in like a positive way, it actually does feel nice in a weird, like, I'm ashamed to admit that a little, but it's nice.
You're totally right. I mean, even as a bi woman, it like feels good to be fetishized for like hooking up with another like woman. Like that feels good. Right. And the whole thing with fetishization is it's like kind of fucked up that it like that because it feels affirming and like, or it just like makes you feel seen, but then it also makes you feel used at the same time. It's like a dual thing. It's like gross.
And sometimes feeling used is like kind of
well,
nice.
Sometimes that's your kink. I think I have, I literally think I have that line in there that's like, now that I'm out, being tossed aside and ignored is my kink. yes, but exactly. Yeah.
But you also did, to give you a little more credit, in the section where you wrote that you find male queerness attractive, you did write that partially it's because it threatens masculinity and it mm-hmm. kind of reimagines masculinity. And it gives bi men this opportunity to smash the patriarchy from the inside, which like I have thought about but hadn't quite clarified that way in my head. And I thought that was a really helpful way to put it of like, yeah, we do get to be inside it and smash it. And that is kind of attractive. When I see other people doing that, it's great.
Yeah. I mean, like another thing from Shiri's work, Shiri talks about how bisexual men are like inherently like bisexuality is all about, you know, but if we focus on confusion, not making up your mind at its core, the idea of not being decisive is not a masculine trait. And so inherently you're like not fitting into this mold of masculinity, like in addition to like, you know, other aspects of heteronormativity. And I thought like that was that Shiri is like also to credit with like that core idea. But I think something else that Shiri talks about that I kind of didn't touch on in the book and sort of is what I meant by that is like, if bisexual men are not conscious of male privilege, then they become kind of dangerous. And I think it's like, it's very important to be very sensitive to like all those interlocking systems and just know that like you have power and you should like use it for good. And that like sexism still does exist and is a critical part of the way that bisexuality like comes to life. And I think you all do such a great job of talking about that on this podcast. So I'm not worried about any of your listeners.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, like bisexuality is so oppressed and minimized and whatever. And like, it's hard to realize it. And it's hard to come out that like, it necessarily for me came with adjusting my worldview and recognizing my privilege in other areas. And like, I could finally sort of see all that almost mm-hmm, for the first mm-hmm. time. Like I was blind to that stuff until I came out. And then I was like, oh, I mm-hmm, see these mm-hmm. connections of the oppression now. So I don't really understand bi men who don't get to that point. Maybe they're just like so oblivious, but we'll have to
I follow some like bi men on OnlyFans and like I think that like they're not necessarily, you know, like their bisexuality is like and this is not to like shit talk like all sex workers like by any means. This is to say like I mean obviously I like subscribe to the content. But this is to say just like it requires like a social awareness as well in order to be like to truly like use its power, like male bisexuality, I mean, because like really there are so many boundaries that can be broken. And I really do think that you all do such a great job of this on this podcast. Like talking about male bisexuality is radical, like in itself, but like using it in a way that's like hypersexualized and using queerness as like a weapon is not productive. And I do think that that happens sometimes within the male bisexual community. But it's almost like a recent thing. Like, I don't think that's because there are so many hurdles to even get to that point that like, I don't think it's a massive, a widespread issue.
Interesting. We'll talk more about that when you're back in season 7.
Yeah, great. On my next book, whatever that is.
Exactly.
Can't even think about that.
Okay. Let's get to Ben the chapter that really focuses on male bisexuality in your book, which is essentially a email thread exchange between you and Ben, which I thought was a really smart way to do it because we're getting your perspectives on it and you're like honest grappling with this stuff, but we're also getting to hear from an actual bi man, which is so underrepresented, and to hear his voice too and his memory of things and how it you know, meshed or didn't with yours. Anyway, I love that chapter. I jumped right to it.
I'm so happy.
I devoured it.
I should say that those emails are like fake, but I did write them. Like they're
whatever.
I think it says that in the legal, but Ben and I wrote them together. Like he was very involved.
I figured it wasn't completely authentic and it had to be somewhat edited or something, but it's a real, you're talking about a real thing that happened.
Everything about it is real. And like, also like I wrote, the chapter is like about us trying to remember the details of this threesome that went horribly because I was like completely left out of the threesome while Ben hooked up with this guy. And like, literally I like went to the bathroom during the threesome and like was not missed at all. And it was very sad. And we were both like so excited to try like that makeup of a threesome. But you know, Ben was like, I had a great time, but I really legitimately didn't remember that many details from it. So most of the details, like it has a very realistic element to the way it was created. The chapter.
Yeah. And I know you already mentioned that you were both bi and like that was a affirming thing for you at that time. Like what else have you learned from that relationship?
I think like, we'd been friends for like 10 years. Like Ben's also in an earlier chapter of the book. And then we like decided to try dating and we dated for like 6 months, like no time. And we were like, nope, this doesn't work. And I mean, I learned a lot about like trying to date your friends. Cause I thought that like, oh, this is absolutely going to work. But it like didn't. I was like, this is going to be the best. And it didn't, it wasn't. So I think I learned a lot of stuff related to that, but with regards to bisexuality, like one thing that we did through the whole 6 months that we dated was we had the relationship be open, but specifically with like people of other genders or people of the same gender or non-binary people. Well, actually we didn't have that. I'll just be honest. We didn't have that clause yet because it was like 2015 and we didn't know any better. So like I was allowed to hook up with women and Ben was allowed to hook up with men. And I was also allowed to hook up with men if I wanted to. And I did at one point. And I didn't hook up with any women because I like had imposter syndrome that like made me unable to like have a good date with women. Like that was happening while that open relationship was happening. So I ended up hooking up with like one guy and Ben had a series of relationships with relationships and hookups with other guys. And I think that dynamic to me is like, it was a really great agreement. And I think that's part of what we were both so excited about dating each other. But like, ultimately, all we were doing was like being friends. Like, I mean, that's separate to the non-monogamy thing. But that was like, our arrangement. And I think I wasn't comfortable enough in my queerness to like really take advantage of that scenario and like, live my truth. Cause I think that's the type of open relationship that a lot of bi people want, just to like have different sexual experiences with people of different genders. And I think it's also like a non-threatening type of non-monogamy, I guess, because it's sort of like, this is something I clearly can't get from you. So like, let's get it elsewhere. And like that, you know, it doesn't create this sense of lack that other types of non-monogamy do. But really the biggest takeaway is that was a bisexual relationship because I had no idea at the time. I thought it was a straight relationship. All my friends definitely think it was just like a straight relationship. No one has like put it together that we were like two queer people exploring our queerness together because Ben was a man and I was a woman. And like that just made us look straight, but we were having such like richer experiences related to queerness.
Right. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting of the blurring of lines of relationships and crossing over into a romantic relationship and then coming out of that, but still remaining friends. It's kind of like a bi thing to do.
Well, you know, actually that was also weirdly affirming because like that's like a lesbian culture thing. That's like a trend, you know, like you like all of my partner's friends, like they existed in lesbian culture for quite a while. And like all of their friends are people who they like used to go on dates with. And I mean, it weirdly like, and then it was also interesting because like my friendship with Ben doesn't really make my partner uncomfortable because like that's like such a standard dynamic for them, you know, it's like, yeah. And so right. I think it is a really queer thing. And I didn't really realize that. And actually, thank you for saying that. Cause with that structure of the chapter where it's basically like us looking back on our relationship, I wrote it like that because I didn't want to get back into first person in my head about us dating because it felt like too raw of territory. Like I was like, I'm not going to go there. And like we agreed that that was the way to do it. But I'm actually like based on what you just said, I'm glad that that shows that dynamic of like queer people keep – important people in their lives, regardless of the relationship.
Right. The email exchange was so intimate and like loving in a way, even though you had both acknowledged you didn't want to be partners together, there's still so clear, like clearly so much affection and love there.
That makes me so happy.
it was so nice to read because I think like straight culture and the way I was brought up is like when you break up with someone, you better cut them out of your life. That's just how people do it. And it's like, why? If you were dating someone, you must like them more than most other people out there. And I get that bad things happen. And sometimes we do have to cut off toxic people, but like a lot of times there's a lot of love and affection, but you're not right to be partners or primary partners. And why throw away the friendship? So I thought that
totally.
Was
well, that makes me so happy. Thank you for saying that.
One more thing about Ben. He said in the I'm curious if you agree with something he wrote, which was that he thinks a lot of guys who identify as either straight or gay are really bi, but very uncomfortable admitting it. And because of that discomfort, they direct a lot of hostility toward bi men. And maybe this isn't a male thing. Maybe this is also like anyone. But it's like that discomfort with their own fluidity or something, but then their choice to remain straight or remain identified as gay, then they direct some hostility our way. Do you agree with that?
I mean, I think like most hostility can be traced back to like what it's bringing up for the other person. Like, I mean, non-binary identity like threatens people because it's like, what is it bringing up for you? Like, is it making you question your gender? Like, have you ever questioned your gender before? Did you realize you could? You know, and the same thing happens with like sexuality. Like, oh, you like think you're gay. Like, maybe you're bi. Like, do you want to have to deal with that? Like, it's hard to deal with it, you know? And I do think it comes up a lot. But I think the core of what Ben was trying to say with that is, and I probably should have edited it to make this more clear, but the core of what he was saying was that there's not a lot of like male bi representation. And I think that's been really, really hard for him. And then we see like, I remember one time he sent me this like Bi Visibility Day video from Refinery 29, which is obviously like a femme skewing publication, like audience primarily women, but it was a Bi Visibility Day video. And it was like, we love all these bi celebs or something. And they were all women. And I know that's been really hard for Ben. And it's really hard to not be able to see yourself and see people who identify the same way you do. So I think that's mainly what he meant. Like, I think in the same paragraph, he talks about how like, he would see like someone who identified as straight on like a dating app. Like he would see like a celebrity who identified as straight on a dating app and be like, come on. Like, I know you're not straight. Like maybe just recognize the definition of bisexuality and like, obviously don't come out if it's not safe for you, but like recognize what you're doing to hold back the rest of us right now.
Actually, we're running out of time, but that leads to a topic we were going to discuss, which is like this idea of straight identified people who are actually behaviorally not straight. But, you know, what do we do with that? Like, do we want to talk about fluidity within straightness? Like, I know a lot of guys who are talking about, yeah, I'm straight, but I might be into this or that. Or is like, is it important to come out as bi, to encourage these people to come out? Like, what do you think about that?
I mean, well, plug that's what your essay is about. And I love I love the topic because it's like the topic is about like gatekeeping ultimately. Like, at the end of the day, like, I don't think we should tell anyone how to identify. But I do think that, like, that's a trend, especially with men. I mean, it's also a trend with women, because this, like, bisexual behavior, as you put it, is, you know, fetishized within the world, and like, queer women are fetishized. And so there's this, like, assumption that you can just be a straight person with this, like, this side behavior. And I guess, actually, for me, that is where the definition flips, because there's a difference between the behavior and the identity. And I do think that now that I've, like, risen above it, like, have my third eye ready to, like, look at this question and, like, be zen and not be like, that's biphobic, duh. I think that I don't want anybody to identify as bi who doesn't identify as bi. Like,
yeah.
But I do want us to overcome the stigmas around bisexuality so that people can make an informed decision about that.
Right. Well said. That's perfectly said. Thank I think, you. Yeah.
Your
I think
essay is great. So plug for that.
Check it out in Jen's newsletter coming out later in September.
Yes.
Or the sometime.
Or probably around Bi Visibility Week. So, yes. Yeah.
Well, who knows when this podcast will come out.
Who
so
knows? Maybe it's already out.
That could be in the future. Yeah, it might already be out. Go check out the bi-monthly right now, and you can download it. Okay, let's take some listener questions. I've selected a couple that you might be able to answer. We've kind of talked about this, but let me just throw it out there in case you have another thought. Somebody asked, why are bi women in relationships with men not seen as, quote, really bi or, like, queer enough?
Yeah, because of monosexism and the way that people assume people's sexuality based on who they're dating. And I'm just going to plug the bi-monthly again because I just wrote a newsletter about this, and it features a bunch of other people's opinions on, or, like, stories basically about being bi and in a straight passing, quote unquote, relationship, or a relationship that just, you know, looks like a straight relationship, but one party or both parties are bi. There were so many amazing responses. So you should check that out.
Awesome. Okay, next question. This is a question from a guy, but I think it applies to both because it's about queer spaces versus straight spaces. As someone that's almost exclusively dated women, I'm finding it challenging and intimidating to navigate queer spaces like apps, bars, and events to try to find a same-sex partner. So I guess the question is, like, any suggestions, or how do you navigate those things? Or how did you, when you started dating women, or, you know, not just men, how did you navigate that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was, like, awful for me. That was, like, the hardest part because I never felt comfortable. Like, I never felt like I deserved to be there. I do think in the community of queer men, it's, like, not as, like, frowned upon whether you, like, deserve to be there. Like, I mean, I guess it really does depend on what you're looking for. Like, if you're looking for a relationship, like, that is very challenging. For me, I felt like I needed sexual experience in order to, like, be able to hold my own in that community and, like, walk around with my head held high. But it was kind of like getting New York restaurant experience. Like, you have to have New York restaurant experience to be employed at a New York restaurant. So, like, how are you supposed to do that? So for me, that was a big challenge, but I would just say, be persistent and, like, keep trying and you'll click with somebody, you know, keep trying.
Cool. Did you do the app thing, like, to find women? Because for guys, I think it's very app-based, at least for me.
I definitely did. But it's also, like, it was so much easier for me to do that with men because, like, we would just be able to, like, have sex afterwards. But, like, with women, I didn't know how, really. And then two, like, I got so nervous and I felt like I didn't deserve to be there. And I felt like they were going to see through me and know that I, like, had sex with a guy last week or something. And, like, I was just going to feel – I always felt – like, I didn't deserve to be there. And there were so many dates with women before I was out that, like, didn't make it into the book because I've, like, blacked them out of my memory because I just, like, made a fool of myself or, like, didn't pick up on signals or, like, I just was so in my head. And it's, like, it's wild to say that because some people don't have a problem with that. Like, some people are just like, I'm here. But I definitely, like, I would always expand my app settings to include women and then – or all genders. And then I would, like, just get bored of, like, stuff that didn't lead anywhere and I would just go back to men. And like that was a cycle for me.
It's funny because I had the exact same experience without reversing the genders. Like I was like uncomfortable and nervous with women after I came out because I was worried they're going to think I'm bi or they're going to like that I slept with a guy. And like, how do I meet people and how do I know if they're interested? Like I had all these things. And with guys, I would just go on an app and we would talk about what totally. Kind of sex we wanted to have, and then you would have that sex. It's funny it, that yeah. that's your experience with men also.
Yeah, no, it totally is. And I mean, like with my friend Ben, it's like it's similar. He's like, you know, he has no problem getting dates with men, but it's like much more challenging to like navigate dates with women. But I think the like thing that I've learned from that is like the right person isn't going to make you feel like you need to discard any part of your identity. And like whatever gender they are, like that needs to be the biggest truth.
Lovely. Lovely. Mm-hmm. Okay. Last question. That might be a lovely note to end on, but last question. Sure. What are some films or TV shows or media in your bi head canon or any good bi representation you've seen lately?
Yes. I mean, there's like so little of it, but I think that the one I've been really loving recently is Generation on HBO. There's a great bi male protagonist and they talk about bisexuality in such a informed way. And it just makes me think that the kids are all right because it's about Gen Z, the show.
Cool. That's awesome. Yes. I saw the pilot and you could already see a little bit of that.
Yeah, you should keep watching. I should keep like, watching. It's really good bisexual representation, I think, because like it checks all the boxes for me, but I'm really curious like what a bi man would think of it.
Awesome. I'll check it out and I'll report back.
Great.
Cool.
Yay.
All right. Well, thank you, Jen, for joining us on Two Bi Guys. I think we could do a whole season together because there's we barely got to the stuff on my list, but we talked about a lot of different things. So
if you need someone to go and drag as your other bi guy at some point, I will volunteer.
Maybe someday we'll just call it Two Bi People or any number of bi people who want as many bi people as we can get in a room.
I don't want us to lose puns for the sake of inclusivity.
Okay, good. Never get rid of the puns. No. Cool. Well, thank you for being here. The book is Greedy: Notes from a Bisexual Who Wants Too Much. It's out on October 5th. Go pre-order it. It's lovely. And thank you, Jen, for being here.
Thank you for having me. Yay.
Two Bi Guys is edited and produced by me, Rob Cohen, and it was created by me and Alex Boyd. Our music is by Ross Mincer, our logo art is by Caitlin Weinman, and we are supported by The Gotham, formerly IFP. Thanks for listening to Two Bi Guys.